This is your second feature film, quite an ambitious project in terms of story, in terms of settings, in terms of ensemble. How did you come up with this idea?
So the idea for Foxhole, the seed of the idea, was a true story told about my grandfather's friend, his comrade in World War II. He was in the Battle of the Bulge, sheltering in place in a foxhole at night during artillery fire, and a German soldier jumped into the foxhole for shelter. And instead of drawing their weapons, they ended up sheltering together all night. And of course, the Germans spoke perfect English, so they spoke all night and they formed a bond. Then at dawn, the story goes, they parted ways, though I think the American may have turned the German in. But regardless of that, years later, after the war in the United States, this American soldier, my grandfather's friend, Morton, was walking around a convenience store in upstate New York, and he feels this presence following him. A man is clearly following him. And he turns to confront him, and it's the German in a black suit here in America right before him. And the German says, "Do you remember me?" And he says, "Of course." And they remain friends for the rest of their life. And so I heard that story, and I knew that needed to be a film. And I originally was going to make a short film with just my friend and I sitting in a hole. This was when I was 14, I was hearing this story. And it turned out I made another film in the meantime, Stray Bullets, and then when this story sort of came back around, seemed like the next thing I wanted to do, I knew I wanted to make another feature, so I thought, why couldn't I just do something like this three different ways, so to speak? I was very interested in war history, always liked watching war movies, and so I was, you know, interested in the idea of choosing more than one time period to focus on different historical contexts, because again, I was very interested in the niches of each historical context. And so I just started by putting that same type of story, like an outsider entering an American context, into three different wars. And the script evolved very far from there, and it actually became sort of a unified story, not an anthology film. But that was the start.
Why did you choose these three periods in American history? You said the original story was like a World War II story, but you decided to go for World War I. What do these three kind of stories, these three wars stand for you as a filmmaker and as a writer of the movie?
Well, I think the Civil War, when you're talking about America, the American Civil War is kind of, it's still just the most relevant thing to our national problems. That type of conflict, racial conflict, economic conflict. And so I knew that I wanted to use the Civil War because it would be the most charged debate among the group, introducing an African-American soldier into a group of Union soldiers, but nonetheless they're just as racist as their Southern counterparts in many ways, but they are tasked with doing the right thing in this context. So they have to grapple with that reality and also with the reality that they are afraid, and do they let that fear overtake them or not? So I knew the Civil War would have to be there. I also love the colors of the Civil War. We think of it, I shot the film in color, the Civil War, black and white for World War I, and then color again for Iraq. And a lot of people say, well, why didn't you shoot the oldest one in black and white? And I say, well, we don't think of that war in black and white. We picture the beautiful paintings with the gray of the Confederacy and the deep blue of the Union, and then of course the blood on the battlefield. And we think of those rich blues and grays for that war. And so I knew I wanted to shoot that in color. And again, I knew that moral conflict would be strong. And so I saw that one very, very clearly right away. And then World War I, it seemed the obvious choice to shoot it in black and white because we see that war through its amazing photography. And so we picture those battlefield images. And of course, I'm forgetting the names of the photographers that I researched at the time, but there's so many amazing pictures and references that I used. The characters trying to work together, but they're faced with this this German outsider jumps into their foxhole. Like I said, that was the original seed of the story. And they have to decide whether to kill him or to turn him in or to set him free. He's unarmed. He surrendered to them. So the question of what they're doing there comes up for the first time overtly. Why are we fighting? And one of the characters asks Jackson, who's the black soldier, and he answers very fittingly for the whole group, I think, democracy, because at that time, you know, the Americans were just sent in for the last 6 months of World War One or so. I mean, they were there 18 months earlier, but they didn't really do the work until the last chunk of the war, and so it was sort of unclear were they cleaning up Europe's mess? But no, they were fighting for democracy. That's at least what my characters thought. And so the moral conflict again there, while not as overt as the racial conflict in the Civil War, it was still present for these characters, though harder to articulate, I think, for the majority of them, except for Jackson. And then it's in Iraq where that conflict is kind of chalked up to really just survival. They're just trying to survive in that war. There's no lofty philosophical speech or talk, and it's really just, how are we going to get home? And that's the recurring theme throughout the whole film. Like, each man just wants to get home, but in Iraq, the group is actually just talking about how the hell are we going to get out of here.
If you are looking at world history now, we just had the American troops and the European troops leaving Afghanistan in a rush, which some people were reminded at the end of the Vietnam War. You're leaving people behind, leaving people who helped Allied troops behind, and this was all a mess. So suddenly we see what war can do or cannot do in this particular war. Is it some sort of strange coincidence that your last story in Iraq, it's very close to what happened just a few weeks ago? Did you think about this, or have people talked to you about this?
No, not people haven't talked to me about this yet. But you know, it was very clear to me that I wanted to use one of these modern Middle Eastern wars, you know, either Afghanistan or Iraq, when I was choosing to do a modern desert war for the third episode. And because these are the wars that I grew up with. You know, I remember just my parents just hated George Bush and would talk about Iraq and Afghanistan as young as ages, you know, 4 to 8, his second term. I just, that was in my life, and certainly can't say that of any other war. And I wanted to choose Iraq because I had access to a Marine Humvee driver. He was in Fallujah. This is sort of a family acquaintance who was a gaffer and a grip, and we knew him because he had entered the film world after his service, which is, I think, interesting that he probably found some of the same camaraderie there than he did in his Marine life. But I had access to him, and Iraq seemed like the landscape I wanted to approach more, as well as the you know, Afghanistan. We went in with such a seemingly strong moral backbone after 9/11, and Iraq always seemed less motivated by that. And as the characters state in the film, one of them asks, what are we doing here? And well, in the previous episode, the answer was democracy. In this one, Jackson answers, oil. So I remember the Marine took issue with that. He said, you know, I don't know if they would ever say that out loud, but you know, then he started thinking. He was like, but you know, some guys weren't afraid to just shit on the government. But generally, it wasn't something that they did. But yeah, I mean, of course, I 20 years. Yeah, it's amazing that we're out of Afghanistan now, or we're on our way. I don't even know what to say about that. It seems like such a mess. Always, it's hard to. I feel like we're gonna need 5 years of hindsight in order to take a deep breath. Yeah.
When we're talking about this movie, casting is key, of course. It's a great ensemble you have there, people who are working in a very limited space in this foxholes, and they are very close to each other, and it's like almost like a stage play if you're watching it. It could easily be transferred to stage if you like, because it's all in one space. Working with an ensemble to do that, can you tell us a little bit about this process? Were you reading before? Were you just playing it out before shooting, or were you doing it on set? Can you tell us a little bit about the ensemble work?
Well, like I said, I answered this question last night at my Q&A. Someone said, how much rehearsal did you have? And the answer really is, I had one day, which is basically none. And I owe a lot to these actors and their chemistry and their performances. They really were very present, each one of them. Cody Costro, Angus O'Brien, Motel, Jen Foster, Alex Hurt, And of course, James LeGros in the first episode, and then Alex Breaux joins them as the German, and Andy Matichak as Gale in the third one. And they're all just so fantastic. So I didn't have to do all that much on set with them because they really gelled. And it was my biggest nightmares on set were just figuring out things like how to fit all of them in the frame, because the foxhole was small. We were trying to stick the camera down in the hole. And then there's five actors, and if you want to get a wide shot of everybody, you have to stage them in such a way where they're so awkwardly scooched into corners that they have to deliver their lines while they're like kneeling or something, just to get everyone in the same shot. And so these kind of menial-seeming problems were my day-to-day nightmares on set. And worrying about performance was a luxury for me. And so I was really lucky to have great actors. But I always knew the film was going to be an ensemble, and I tried to make it an evenly weighted ensemble where everyone has moments to shine, and of course there's louder characters than others, but each one is crucial and represents a sort of character type, especially the four central characters that are the Union soldiers in the Civil War. Each represents a sort of classic caricature, and I tried to bring life and sympathy to each one of those perspectives.
You worked the second time around with James LeGros. Of course, the whole ensemble is great, but he's somehow the centerpiece of all of this. He's the heart of most of the scenes. How do you get along with him? Because obviously you've known each other for a long time.
Yeah, James really feels like family. I mean, when he shows up on set, and of course, he and my dad go way back, and he worked with me on my first feature. And so he really just feels like part of the extended family. And on this shoot, I will say he was going back and forth between shooting the Al Pacino series Hunters for Amazon. And so we were so lucky to get him, because he would literally be working 24-hour days. He would come up in the car after a shoot with them and then crawl into his gear. And so it was very taxing for him, I know. But the moments when he seemed like he was enjoying himself were those that I cherished. And otherwise, I was just grateful that he was around. And he's also good at keeping his cast, you know, his fellow castmates sharp. And he's just fun to have on set, because he's always sort of pushing everyone's buttons and reminding you that this is, just a movie, which is helpful when you can get too in your head about things.
You not only directed and cut it and wrote it, but you also, again, scored it by yourself. So music is obviously an important part of your life. You're having a band, Holiday. You always play music. Can you tell us about this kind of music for this movie? Because it's obviously more orchestrated. It's more of a big score.
Yeah, it sure is. And that was a harder thing to pull off for me as a sort of guitar synth-based mood composer. So I was tasked, yeah, with basically creating a classic orchestral score for a war film, which was way out of my wheelhouse. And, you know, I went into it right before COVID struck in March 2020. And then when COVID hit, I had all this extra time to write the score, which I think was a blessing ultimately for the film. It meant that there were no more deadlines, and I could sort of take the time that the film needed. And so that was what I spent my quarantine doing, and I sort of learned my process as I went. I relied a lot on improvisation, which is harder for this genre of score, because later I had to turn a lot of different improvised tracks, you know, where I had stacked different synth instruments. I had to turn that into sheet music for actual players who were going to come in and perform it, string players, vocalists, you know, percussionists, you name it. We used them all. And all of this was done over Zoom. So I would be sitting on my couch just at home watching the TV as different squares from different parts of the country on the TV played my music. And hopefully I could hear, you know, hopefully it wouldn't start to break up and I could hear what they were playing. But I really, again, like the actors, I had to rely on them and their talent. And of course, these musicians brought so much. Dave Egger, in particular, was the cellist, and that's sort of the backbone to each track. There's a bed of cellos, which you might not even notice, but it's just holding everything up, and then there's many beautiful moments where he rises to the surface. But again, these people were in Nashville, LA, New York. I was in upstate New York, and then we had to mix it so it sounded like one cohesive thing. Mixed it with Matt Rocker in New York City. And so that was a big challenge, but I was lucky to get to that point in the process and had help at that point. But the composing of it from the beginning You know, I was composing watching the picture, not to a metronome. So there were lots of ways that I did it that might not be how I would do it next time around. I was one of those things where I feel like as soon as I finished, I knew how I could do it. I knew how I could have started. But yeah, hopefully I'll do it again. But it's one of those things that I wonder, is it just me unwilling to relinquish control, holding on to the role of the composer? Because music is such a big part of my life, of course. But I wonder what a different voice would bring to my film. And would I see things in someone else's composition over my images that would bring new meaning to my images? Or is it just better to lay on more and more of my personality onto the film? You know, I don't know. Maybe at this stage in my career, sort of healthy for me to just see what if it was just all me on the screen. But I think, you know, I'll be interested in the future to see if I try to find a collaborator, and that goes for other parts of the process too, editing and writing. But I think at this point, I like having the control of the whole process. Already it feels risky to be handing certain things off to other people just because of my nature, and filmmaking is so collaborative that you do have to rely on others. But, of course, just like a painter or a writer, you just want to be able to do it all yourself, but you can't. The idea of doing everything is attractive, but it's ultimately not sustainable, I think. And so I do believe in the sort of trifecta of writing, directing, editing as filmmaking. That's just how I was raised. And that I think, would remain true. But the composing is the question for me. Would I ever collaborate with a composer or hand the baton off to somebody else? And I think the answer is like, yes, I'm totally interested in that, depending on the project, I think. I think I know now my strengths as a composer, and a certain kind of movie I might make would warrant my composition, whereas another kind might be better to hand off to someone else.
This was a world premiere here in Germany. First of all, what kind of reactions did you get? How was the movie received? Was it what you expected? And what is the next step for Foxhole? Where is it going after this screenings here in Oldenburg?
Well, the next thing we're doing in 2 weeks, we have the North American premiere at the Woodstock Film Festival in upstate New York. And so that'll be wonderful because that's right where we shot the film, and the whole crew will be able to attend and the cast. So that's really like a cast and crew celebration, and it's close to home. So that's wonderful. I've had many films there, and we're very close with the whole team there. So that's a very comfortable environment, and I know that the whole community will come out to support the film. So that's lovely. And as far as the screening last night, you know, I was very always touched when people connect with the movie. It was a small audience, but people came up to me afterwards, and you know, you can always tell when someone connected to the movie. Because they usually don't know quite what to say, and that is always fine. I always feel like, you know, you never know what to tell somebody after you look at their art of any kind, you listen to their album, and that's fine. It's like, if you don't have to say, that probably means you liked it. But yeah, so now I'm just, you know, we're hoping to hear back from other festivals in the future, but we have a few distribution feelers. So, of course, the ultimate goal is to get it onto streaming platforms and in theaters, hopefully. So yeah, I'm up for the ride, whatever it might be.